I'm deeply honored that the American Astronomical Society should do me this great honor and present me with this medal that bears the hallowed name of George Henry Hale. Hale was not only a very great astronomer and solar physicist in the technical and the intellectual sense, but was responsible for blasting open many financial and administrative barriers to make it possible for hundreds of other astronomers to make leading contributions. And in fact, to make America, the United States, the foremost astronomical nation in the world long before it assumed the political leadership of the Western world. I'm not only honored, but also rather humbled by this award. And the reason is that so much of what my colleagues and I have had to accomplish to earn the medal, and I must emphasize that that medal really belongs to no one person, but to quite a number of people, dedicated people over the years who have worked with me in Australia. Not all of them Australians, some of them Americans, some of them Japanese, some of them French, and so on. But what I was saying is that so much of what has been accomplished has been through American support. It was through a grant from the Ford Foundation that made the Kolguru radio heliograph possible, but quite apart from that, Americans more than any other people have given our group the moral support and encouragement to forge ahead and never look back. And in recent times there has grown a very strong and fruitful collaboration between American physicists working with spacecraft data and our own people with ground-based data. Now, I hope it was realized before I was asked to give this lecture that I have not for 10 years now been able to indulge in the title of a solar physicist or a radio astronomer. 1970 was the last year that I actually did research in this field. So, because I thought I ought to talk now about the work being recognised, it follows that my lecture must have a historical flavour, and I would like to cover a period of 22 years, from 1948 to 1970. So you will learn nothing new from what I said. Normally, in a review lecture, one tends to give emphasis to the latest results. I shall perhaps in the opposite direction and give emphasis to the critical stages of each development, however early in the piece they were, and however primitive the techniques may seem on present-day standards. It was in 1948 that I became one of a small number of people working on solar and cosmic noise problems. Radio astronomy, the name hadn't been invented, at the CSIRO Radio Physics Division. And those of us in that small group were exceedingly fortunate, because the phenomena and the subject that we were investigating had no established techniques, it had no theoretical base, and above all, no literature. There were about a handful of papers, and it was a tremendous advantage not to have to read other things before you started. And furthermore, in Dr. Joe Porty, we had the perfect mentor, a man who had got his PhD at Cambridge during Rutherford's time, and who knew how to create the environment needed for research. When I joined this group, the latest exciting result from the Sun is shown on the first slide. It was due to a number of three people working at different fuel stations, I think Payne Scott, Gansley, and Bolton. That's John Bolton. And it was very common in those days to record the Sun as a function of time on the charts, and then one got a lot of most interesting wiggly lines and things. But this record, for the first time, showed a systematic effect when one compared the radiation from the Sun at three different frequencies, 200 megahertz, 100 megahertz, and 60 megahertz. And this seemed a very exciting thing, and there was a development of functional frequency. And talking with Pawsey, it was suggested that I might have a go at making a radio spectrograph that recorded the radiation as a function of frequency and time. I should say that it took about a year to build this equipment. It was in an incredible hodgepodge of sort of spring and ceiling mats. And by the time I built it, one of the authors here, Ruby Payne Scott, had done a fairly good study of this kind of event and decided this record was a freak. None other showed any systematic effect of this kind, but one set of times was rather random. So in a way, the reason for building the spectrograph had disappeared. But when I came at the end to after 4 months of observations to write up the work, I did note in the first paper that the dynamic spectra showed widely different features and were often complicated. The analysis showed, however, that the spectra of many of the observed bursts conformed to one of three types, which for the purpose of that paper were called type 1, type 2, and type 3. And it was quite amazing some years later that there was an international conference held on the origin of type 3 bursts. Well, the most spectacular type, shown on the next slide, sorry. First of all, here we have the equipment of that very first spectrograph. The pen is New South Wales. I don't know whether we can sharpen the focus a little. You can see it's a wooden cross, as it were, with wires joined around, making a rhombic area. And the thing was dragged around by ropes to the point roughly to the Sun. And on the next slide, there I was in my ex-naval uniform, tropical wig, using a winch, which was necessary to haul the thing around or to turn the nation. And you can see how sophisticated the laboratory is in the back. The next slide shows the originals of the first type 2 bursts to be recorded. Frequency goes from left to right, top 40 to 70 megahertz. Time goes downwards, and the whole record is about 300 seconds long on the left hand side. And to show intensities, one used the same conventions as in geographical atlas, mountains being brown and the although that's been agreed, it's not. And one saw that, in fact, in the left-hand case, one did get these slow time delays. It was a real effect. The onset going gradually from high to low frequencies. But on the right-hand side, one had a very common type of example where you could see that the beginning got knocked up, got confused by other radiation. And so it was no wonder that pain spot came to the conclusion that the first event was free. The next slide shows recorded altogether four type 2 bursts, and the interpretation is basically then the same as it is today. We've been able to wait a lot more too, but around that time, the one bit of theoretical base we had was the work of Dean Martin, the distinguished Australian ionospherist, who worked out a theory of the quiet sun in which radiation tended to come from different levels in the solar atmosphere. And he had also suggested, at a very early stage, that one might be in the non-thermal component of the solar radiation might be due to plasma oscillations, Langmuir waves, and that different layers in the corona would be excited at different frequencies. Now, is that the case on the next slide? On the left-hand side shows the frequency drift of the four events that were recorded in that time, all somewhat similar in greater frequency drift. And on the interpretation was that there was some kind of agency travelling out through the corona, exciting successively lower frequencies. And on the right, we have a typical interpretation of the dotted line on the left, a high time clock showing velocity somewhere between 300 and 700 kilometers per second. In fact, the solar model we used at that time was later to be improved, the standard solar models, the nuclear model, for instance, and those velocities were down by a factor of two, and the typical speeds came to be 500 to 1,000 kilometers a second, typically. And we immediately suggested that perhaps we had found the agency which linked the sun and the earth for the production of magnetic storms and aurora on the earth. On the next slide, you see the other interesting, particularly interesting type of burst, the type 3 bursts, where once again you had a frequency drift, but this time at a much greater rate than going from high to low. I think once again the focus may be there. These are some variables of the antique side. Here we're dealing with a time scale of a few seconds to drift from right to left, from high to frequencies. And another rather distinguished Australian mathematician, Jager, met with many of you in the textbook, known as Carswell and Jager in the mechanics and so on, in the old school days. But he was a great help, and he came up with a theory, which seemed a very ingenious one, that somewhere there was a transient, when one of these bursts occurred, a transient occurred high in the solar corona. In one place, it emitted a pulse of radiation, and that because of the group retardation, the time of travel in an ionized gas, the high frequencies would arrive to the Earth's first, and the low frequencies would arrive later. But this seemed very comparative. Now, the next slide shows an idealized type of, an idealized type 3 birth. And there was not much to measure in the type 3 birth. One can measure its drift rate. One could measure its drift rate, but the other thing that looked interesting was the curvature. That was another characteristic. And a very easy measure of curvature was to split the frequency up into two equal parts, and then plot the time. So the two time intervals, note them separately. And this type of curvature analysis is shown on the next slide. That's one time interval versus the other time interval. So that this has had no curvature, if it were a straight line, all the events would apply on the bottom of the line. And the bottom of the diagram corresponds across the curvature downwards. Now, it was possible on this diagram to show the effect of Jager's theorem of transients. And in fact, it predicted, it's a little line just here, it predicted the points you like on that line. On the other hand, we were very unsure of what type of atmosphere, solar atmosphere, we were dealing with, what kind of irregularities was made particularly off of the picture when one's dealing with disturbances of this kind. But it was possible to prove a theorem that whatever the atmosphere of the sun, whatever one it had on this diagram to lie, the curvatures had to lie in this shaded area. And it was clearly a violation of the theory. On the other hand, if one was dealing with an actual disturbance moving out to the corona, they should lie on a straight line. And this straight line here, this dotted dashed line, corresponds to a 1/3 velocity of light, velocity. And that looked far more promising, but we were very conservative. Because if we suggested this to anybody, they laughed at us that the sun emitted material at that kind of velocity, 1/3 the velocity of light. So we concluded merely that it was consistent with this interpretation. Well, after this period of observation, a series of observations, we decided that the next step was to build a much better spectrograph, wider frequency range, and incorporating colorization and a degree of things better in its engineering characteristics. The first one is falling to pieces by the sun. And the next slide shows the next spectrograph aerials. These are the two lower frequency ranges spectrographically with their cross comets, which are now driven by belts and things to follow the sun, so there will be no more ropes to the moon. And the next slide shows the high frequency. And the three of them were the radiation in the three bands was coordinated to produce an integrated dynamic spectrum. Well, after a somewhat bleak beginning of observation, it was in 1952, and it was right in the middle of sunspot minimum. The great day came, November the 21st, 1952, 23 hours, 50 minutes in the rest of time, and a rather important event occurred, which is shown on the next slide. It was a type 2 burst. We now change our convention. We go frequency downwards, time left to right, so these records, the first approximation are a plot of height versus time, when we're dealing with this type of radiation. And having done, measured this up very carefully, we found that we were in fact dealing with harmonics, the first harmonic, and the fundamental. We found the same thing happening also with type 3 burst. On the next slide is an example of the number of them. Once again, the 2-to-1 harmonics. When we, in both cases, when we look back at our earlier records, we can see evidence of this, but the spectrum coverage was less than 2-to-1, and we could not have come to this conclusion. Well, this had a very significant impact, I think, the discovery of harmonics, because it first of all confirmed that we must be dealing with a resonant frequency. The mechanism must be associated with a resonant frequency, and it gave huge support to the plasma hypothesis. That the plasma frequency, and now in second harmonic, was being excited. It had an impact, in fact, on plasma physics, and Professor Ginsberg assures me that it was the origin of the process known as combination scattering, and it led to the first the prototype theory of proper theory of type 3, type 2 emission in 1958 by Ginsberg and Schlesinger, which continues to this day, but with some modification. Now, with the November event, the first harmonic type 2 event, came also the start of a new type of study through the time relationships between the various events. On the next slide, you see this. I've jumped in time many, many years in showing you a recent record by Suzuki of harmonic type 3, in which the color represents colorization, and you can see, in fact, it means the fundamental up at the top. Color red is very considerably polarized, 50% polarized, whereas the main levels, the harmonic is unpolarized. The next slide shows an analysis of that November event, height against time. And on that same record, one could see a fade out at the beginning. That is to say, all the man-made stations were on the record faded out. And in fact, the cosmic noise background was to fade out. And it did suggest that once that we were dealing with perhaps it is an initiating event, disturbance at that point, low in the solar atmosphere, which ejected immediately X-rays, which caused it to fade out on the Earth, and initiating the solar event along here. And bit by bit, we began to come to the conclusion that we were dealing with supersonic, somewhat supersonic velocities, and the likelihood was that this was, in fact, a sharp wave. The next slide shows the next development, in which the first of many, many examples of this has come, the relationship between the timing of the type 2 burst and the timing of the type 2 burst consistent with an explosion initiating event here. The next slide gives more details that one, representation of this two parts. The photos can become more a representation of where the an instability occurred at this point, giving rise instantly to a stream of electrons traveling up. And on the next slide,